Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. Today, I want to bring up a subject that's very interesting for me because it gets at the heart of something that I don't think in all of the religious people who are devoutly religious, incredibly informed scholars of the Bible. And you know, unfortunately, I don't hang out with people who are Muslims. I don't hang out with people who are of the Jewish descent. So I don't get a chance to really test them out on this. But on the Christian realm, and I'm assuming this is familiar, a problem for thinkers in certain religions, and I'm willing to bet it's not a problem in other religions. Buddhism tends to include the entire universe in its conceptual thinking. This episode's called The Balance of God. And I have, this year, a new group of Mormons coming by my house. You know, and I love these kids. I think they're fantastic people. Very interested in what they believe and why they believe it. But they're archetypes, you know, in their approach. And I just want to throw at you the question that I ask Christians all the time that makes them just stop in their tracks. And they're not angry or anything, but they're just like, that's a weird question. And the question goes like this, because it gets at the heart of sort of the conceptual idea of what religions, these popular religions like Christianity, have turned into today. And this shouldn't injure any of your faith. Honestly, it should just pose the question. But if you think about the formation of Christianity, let's just say we go with the story, 100% being true, maybe not every situation being literal, but the overall truth that there were lessons taught over several thousand years, which are comprised in the Old Testament, and on a particular day, a child was born who was divine, lived approximately 30 plus years, and was hung on a cross to complete the law of the Old Testament. And this happened on a place called Earth. Flat, round, doesn't make a difference. We have countries all over the world. By the time he came in, fabled to come in, we had human beings all over the planet. And we know this. Every continent had human beings. Even islands had human beings. But God only gave a certain region of the world his son, as the story goes. Now, if you ask the Mormons, he also came to North America. Apparently, you know, they had things like horses from the conquistadors without the conquistadors actually getting here yet. But he gives a very select small group of people this doctrine through this sun story. And if you just stop right there and take a little analysis of the demographics and the geographics of the story, God has chosen to insert his word and the belief of his entire paradigm of the Holy Trilogy, let's just say, to a very tiny group of people. And that was a very imbalanced methodology of communicating his will to man. Because what happens after that? These people apparently felt very driven that they had witnessed a divine event. Story goes, this man was crucified, rose the next day, communicated to all his people, and then ascended into heaven with a commitment to come back. Having taught all these incredible stories that weren't his original creation, he never said they were. He taught through metaphor. Again, some of his stories I found in hieroglyphs. Prodigal son stories. But he never said he wrote them on the spot. But then we have all hell break loose. We have a Senate of the Romans turn into the Vatican. And the technical story is all the popes turned into, all the senators turned into popes, and then when they died, they turned into saints. No word was ever written of Christ that we can find before about 350 AD, despite any rumors you might have heard. And people will pass rumors around like facts. It's amazing. But the second you say, show me the proof of anything written down besides your book, there's nothing there. Just like when you say, show me COVID-19 in a microscope. Crickets. They'll show you a CG model, a fictional model to prove that something exists. Isn't that amazing? But let's still just go with it. Now, let's pause so we get another analogy of modern day times in us. How many times have you had a friend call you out of the blue? This typically will happen with relatives, to be honest, in my experience, where someone has found some medical solution. They found some trend of medicine that's been injected into them from a pharmaceutical company trying to sell a treatment. In the late 80s, early 90s, it was all about cholesterol testing. Oh my God. Cholesterol. I'm just so miscommunicated how that was done. But someone over the telephone is trying to get you to adopt something. Herbalife, Amway, Avon. But your life is good. And you don't need those products. You don't have any illnesses. You don't need those services. But they want you to be ill so they can help you. They want you to feel ugly, so you need their stuff. And it's annoying, isn't it? You know, hey man, I like you, but can we talk about something else? Because you preaching to me is getting really annoying. All right, so freeze that in your brain. I take all of Europe from England, probably up to Norway and then down to Rome. And imagine someone telling you that your entire faith system of the universe is wrong. And you've got to adopt something that you never witnessed. Apparently, you know, the idea is that people witnessed it, took a long time to write it down, because there's no printing press. And apparently, the Romans never wrote it down in marble, even though they wrote down a bunch of other stuff. They had papyrus, and they were writing down. I mean, the Greeks already captured a lot of mathematics out of Egypt. Named it all after themselves. That's fine. Someone's got to do it. And then the Romans rolled up those libraries into universities. So there was methodologies of writing things down. We just didn't have a mechanized methodology of doing it. Inquisition start. They go for hundreds and hundreds, almost a millennia of inquisitions. If you don't believe this story, of which you have no witnessing facts about it, well, you could be physically in trouble. Because they locked the whole region down, just like in 2020. The only way to get a privilege with your government was to tattletale on somebody. So it turned into this horrible, see something, say something. But people were also making it up just to get a privilege. At the full expense of whoever they told on. The Vatican invents the mercenary. An abstracted force that will beat you up, kill you. And it won't go back to the church because it's a separate group. Crusades eventually start. The first city that's ransacked by the Crusades, where everyone was raped and pillaged, and the place was burned down, was actually a Christian city. But the people doing it were such mouth-breathing Nimrods, they had no idea what they were doing. But they were terrified by their state that if they don't fight in the Crusade, well, they're going to have a lot of problems with the Roman legions. So this methodology of distributing the information from a divine being was very impractical was very imbalanced. And think about everybody in Africa, all the countries of Eurasia, which is basically Russia, the Middle East, and Asia, North America, South America, the Aborigines, maybe Ellis Island will have people, don't know. No information is being carried to these regions, unless you, again, go with Mormonism, and then you can at least account for North America and the Native Americans getting taught this stuff. And that's what this episode's about, is that question. I have missionaries who come to my house, or missionaries from the Latter-day Saints of Jesus Christ, aka Mormons, and they have to come to my house, and they have to proliferate the world, as all missionaries do from all churches, all sects of churches, because they have to spread the news. This event occurred some 2,020 years ago. Instead of the Divine Father, God Himself, affording every living being on this planet the same privilege that He gave to a serial killer of Christians who went by the name of Saul, who was running around organizing gangs to kill any Christian they found, as the story goes. Now, that may not be true at all, but that's the story. They believe that story. Saul is, again, you know, beyond any serial killer we have recognized in modern times, he has killed countless Christians. And he is given the privilege. As the story goes, he's crossing the desert, going from one town to another to kill some more Christians. He wasn't heeding the Ten Commandments, even though there is a passage in the Old Testament that says if someone doesn't honor God, to kill them. It's actually in the Christian Bible. The guy gets touched by God. Never meets Jesus in his entire lifetime. And he changes his name from Saul to Paul. He ends up writing about 80%, 70 to 80% of the New Testament in letters to various regions. Very valuable information. Again, the Bible is one of the greatest manuals on how to behave in society. It really is. Isn't that weird? Let's think that through. The punishment for not coming on board, of which Christ never spoke of. Christ never told the Catholic Church to start an Inquisition, to hire mercenaries, to torture and murder and kill people if they didn't believe in Him. He never did that in His walks. So the Bible itself utterly contradicts this violence. It does say spread the word. But then again, why does anyone have to spread the word if God Himself is giving probably one of the most blasphemous human beings not only a second chance, but like I've said in several episodes, you have to remember the disciples had no faith in Jesus. They knew Jesus if they existed. There's no need for faith when you see something with your own eyes, when you hang out with Him and see what He does. You know, point blank, man. Walks into a city, goes to a brothel, washes all the prostitutes' feet. He preaches on mounds. He conducts miracles, countless miracles, walks on water, stabilizes the ocean and erases a storm, cast epilepsy into pigs, and then forces the pigs to die in the pond next door, right? Water into wine, duplicates fish and bread. There's no faith there. There's absolute proof. This guy is the one. To me, if the story's true, anyone who believes it wholeheartedly stands far higher in my regard than the disciples themselves. because they actually have to struggle to believe every day, every second. Which is why they get angry if anyone ever kind of gets in there and scratches it, maybe what they believe. But God had the ability, has the ability, to touch every single human on earth the same exact way he touched Saul, a murderer, a killer, a sinner, the worst of the worst, man. But he didn't, according to this story. So I find it interesting that missionaries have to exist at all. But what I also find interesting is when I pose this question, you will see deer eyes in the most sophisticated people, because in their eyes, they have so swallowed the doctrine of Christianity, they never ask that question. Asking God to be reasonable. Is that heresy? To ask God to be reasonable? Well, it's actually not insulting God, in my opinion. It's questioning man, in my opinion. Because in my opinion, man created all of that. Divinely inspired? Sure. But again, we are trying to figure out how to build societies, to institutionalize a rule of law. Now, there's two ways to put law on the ground. We'll get back to the balancing thing in a second here. We all want to live safe and sound. If you're of sound mind, I think privilege usually yields people who get off on hurting others, hurting animals first, than humans. No matter how poor or rich an individual might be, it's the idle hands of the devil that create these people. I've seen it in my hometown. We have people that were rich who turned into disgusting humans, and we have people that weren't so rich. I don't know if they were poor, but regardless, they had time on their hands with no education, I guess, or guidance by an adult to get a project. Why don't you learn how to fix a car? Why don't you learn how to build a house, pave a road, something? Keep yourself busy. Because it's you sitting around on the beanbag that's got you thinking about how you can hurt an animal and then a human. Now, some people might lean on the old adage, which I believe is a cop-out. And the cop-out's always created to deal with a contradiction in reality, which is to simply say, well, God works in mysterious ways. Well, that little saying allows man to do whatever man wants to do in the name of God. Because if they create a paradox in front of you, they can throw that phrase out and it paints over the paradox, sweeps it under the rug, as they might say. I find that in the last year, I've just noticed sort of lazy thinking. Again, what's this show about? It's about deep thinking, going way into the subtext of something, the metaphysical reality behind someone's implication by asserting a particular doctrine over man. A person who says to me, well, I just believe the Bible 100%. That's lazy thinking for me. They say that because guess what? How much work needs to be done after saying that? Well, if you care to learn what's in the Bible, I guess your only task left is to read the Bible, understand it, and enact it in your life the best you can. I think you'll become a wonderful person if you do that. That this practice of saying, well, don't question anything. or you'll be in trouble. I have friends of mine that believe the Bible 100%. And what's really interesting is this passive aggressiveness, because we're really good friends. There's a passive aggressiveness that comes out when I start to throw out, I think, to be logical questions about the Bible. I'm just trying to understand it deeper. And it really draws back to that childhood experience when your parents are telling you to do something. A lot of times it makes sense. Sometimes it doesn't make sense. And the more inquisitive and intelligent and clever a child is, they ask you why. And the parents, if they're not lazy, will take time out of their day to explain it to them. If they're super busy, if you're a parent, you can simply say, well, ask me again tonight or whenever you got the time free, and I'll explain it to you. Sorry, I don't have time right now, but it's important to me that you get your answer. And the kid feels like, boom, that's cool. I asked such a good question. My parent is going to take time out of their future to answer. And they love me enough, they want to make sure I got the answer. But that's not what happens with bad parents. Bad parents say stuff like, because they said so. Or what my mom used to always say, because I'm your mother. She could say, stand out in the street while I start the car. Why? Because I'm your mother. It was just never, ever an explanation of anything. Super lazy parenting, man. And it was sort of a hubris, narcissistic way of parenting. I am so high and mighty. I don't have to explain anything to you. It's like, okay, Oracle and Matrix, whatever. And let's remember, we're always saying in the modern age of red pilling that we want to be critical thinkers, aka people who could think for ourselves. And someone telling us what to do, we're not opposed to it. But if we don't understand the instruction that's coming out of the mouth, then we want to know. So if a parent constantly refuses to answer and explain something, then what they are inadvertently doing is shutting down the mind of the child. And I have fears that when you introduce a super complex story like the Bible, which has just beauty all the way through it, and the child has questions, hopefully they've got a church to explain any answers that they might have as to what a passage means, why something was written, why a book wasn't included in the Bible, why others are. Because it keeps them a critical thinker. At the same time, they're ingesting a methodology of living their life. But is it unreasonable to expect God to have claimed to have made us in his image, if you believe the story, but we are not to assume that God has any likeness to us in an intellectual level? So what does it mean that God created us in his image within that book if we are not at least similar in the way that we rationalize thinking? Is it merely he's physically has two arms, two legs? Yes, the Mormons. The answer is definitely yes. Most Christian paintings by Michelangelo have God as a nice old man living inside of a brain-shaped harem touching Adam's hand. I'd like to suggest for a second that regardless of your faith, and I respect your faith, trust me, it is your obligation to ask these questions and to contemplate them, to not be angry, but to simply go, yeah, you're right. You know, I mean, I was raised in this, and I do believe it's still true. But yeah, maybe we should ask some questions every once in a while and not feel guilty. Can you imagine, you know, if the proverbial heaven as we have had it loosely defined, what do we know about heaven? Well, there's pearly gates because heaven has a wall around it, and it's floating in the clouds, and we don't know what's past those gates. You never hear what's past those gates, besides God's in there somewhere. I don't know what your mind does, but mine creates a really weird abstract definition of what's in there. But you get up to God, and you've been one of these sort of lemmings of Christianity. Never asked any questions. Perhaps you did missionary work, which God bless you. But you get there, and to your utter surprise, God says, "What was that?" And you're like, "What? Well, that life you just lived, what was that? What do you mean? Well, you acted like a frickin' robot the whole time you were down there. Didn't I give you a brain?" And you're like, "Oh my God, what are you talking about?" And within seconds, within split seconds in heaven, you realize, because he wouldn't ask you a question you wouldn't know the answer to, because that's God. He works so cool, as I'm suggesting in this analogy. And you instantaneously realize you were supposed to do a lot more while you were here. Be less impressionable. Still be a good person. Still follow the doctrine of the Bible. Why not? What's bad about it? And seriously, you'll be a really good person if you follow the Bible. You will. Just remember, eye for an eye was deprecated. But we've seen several examples of the way God deals with people that are harmful to society. The story of Sodom and Gomorrah. The story of the calf. The story of the flood. He knows how to smack down. And, you know, hey, what do you do if your father or mother does those things? You grow up to do the same thing. It's just the way it is. You don't do it as a kid, but you might do it as an adult. And that's where perhaps Christianity gets a little out of hand. If it's not as literal as some people want to translate it to be. But when I look at all the other humans on planet Earth, we will never know the true population of North America, South America, Eurasia, Africa at the time that Christ came here. We simply never will. Looking at all of the incredible megalithic structures all over the world that predate any of this occurring, it's pretty apparent there were extremely sophisticated societies all over the planet, man. So we have physical proof for sure that the intellectual capacity to understand whatever God's message was definitely present. As a matter of fact, we believe we have found countless examples of human beings creating their own religions to deal with the unknown. To explain the stars. As soon as man truly realized the mournful paradigm of death, burial rituals started to send them on their way. Burial sort of afterlife passages, especially out of Egypt, started. But South America has some extremely advanced stories about where you go after death. Some tribes in South America believe that they should mummify their ancestors and keep them in the house and pull them out on their birthday and dress them up. And they even smoke cigarettes and put it in the mouth of the dead body. Wild, man. What's actually interesting about that is that most societies had figured out the spiritual side of things. When you talk to the Aborigine about their belief of the spirits after death, they have a completely different world, a dream world. I believe that's how they reference it through translation, that they believe we go into. Native Americans, my gosh, they still worship. I shouldn't say worship, that's probably an overhanded word, but they still have rituals that believe in spirits. Okay, what's the Day of the Dead in South America? You didn't, as far as I know, the Day of the Dead is not something necessarily practiced in Spain, because Christianity wiped that out in Spain. So I assume it's some sort of Peruvian pygmy ritual that was then folded into the hybrid race of Mexico. The conquistadors were mating with the indigenous people. It's all very beautiful. But why would God? Because here's the kicker. The one little touch point of the whole story of the Bible gets man to be the worst of man is this notion that they say, if you do not believe in this one instance of a guy coming onto planet Earth, dying for your sins, which he may very well have done, if you weren't there to see it, and you need more evidence to see it, and you're not willing to, again, perhaps be baptized under that notion, then man, who has created probably 99% of any definition of a realm known as hell, will tell another human being that they're going to hell for eternity if they don't adopt the doctrine of the person that came to them. Well, let's take a step back on that little process, shall we? If you ever went to school, especially college, where the subject matter gets much more difficult, you will undoubtedly have told the story 100 times. Well, I had a really good professor for this class, had a super bad professor for that class. Some teachers are just so angry at their life that they sabotage children. I've seen it. Some professors are simply uneducated about their art. I'll give you an example, and I said this several episodes back, but I had a computer science teacher in De Anza College in Cupertino that knew his stuff, baby. I mean, he was amazing. It was very fundamental algorithms. And then the very next teacher I had was a relic. And I was a software engineer at 18. And I'm taking these classes at about 21 through 23. And I knew that what he was teaching was not of any use. The other guy was teaching the basics, and that was always going to be useful for your mind, especially as the web reinvented all the problems. I went back to the basics in JavaScript and was able to use ancient theory to get things done. But this other guy, not so much. So now imagine. I want you to focus on the teacher that you know in your mind. Maybe you don't even remember their name, because I don't remember this dude's name. He wasn't a good teacher. And here comes the doorbell ring. You don't know anything about Christ or Christianity. Perhaps you maybe have heard of it, but you ain't never cracked open a Bible. And you get a bad voice on the other side of the door, incompatible with the way you think. Perhaps they're sort of one of these hell and brimfire kind of people that if you just don't take the first thing out of their mouth, they'll just cast you to hell, trying to scare you into adhering to their belief system. And so you don't have really an agent from God coming to you. You just have sort of a random person who's misunderstood the most fundamental basics of Christianity. And your doorbell never rings again. All right. The other one is this. So the balance of God would be God picking a time, an epoch, a year and a day, to bless the world with the same blessing he gave a murderer, so that we all are on the same page once. But now God's a pretty smart fella, and he knows, or she knows, that over time, things get lost in history. And so it's important to teach the next generation, however long God knows it takes for us to lose track of history. Now, obviously, Rome built a very profitable system to collect 10% of your money, as well as all kinds of other donations to control society. We know all of the horrible things they've done to children over time. And so they basically own society, just like the Masons did when they were the only people that knew how to build buildings, water wells. You did anything for a Mason, because without them, your little town didn't grow. All right, well, my entire life, without exaggeration, I have heard people say, and now the internet amplifies this considerably on my Twitter feed. It's very interesting. I hear about the return of Christ every single day. He is coming back, end times, coming back, end times, coming back, end times. Okay, so let's parse this a little bit. Without a balanced nature of giving the gift of God's knowledge to all human beings, his children, all at the same time, such that the Aborigines meet the Europeans and they're like, you too, right? And they have crosses on their chests. They weren't where Jesus existed, but they were gifted, just like Saul, never met Christ. Saul was not present to see Jesus on a cross, but he knew it so well in that blessed moment that he wrote, again, 70 to 80% of the New Testament. Well, that's a pretty powerful moment. It's exactly like the moment where Neo learns Kung Fu because a wire gets jacked into the back of his brainstem, right? How cool would it have been? Everybody meets everybody and everybody goes into each other's churches. You know, you go into Aborigines Christian Church, right? A Native American Christian Church. But I think there would be a heartbeat that would be absolutely necessary to re-galvanize the belief in Christ and Christianity in general. Now, would God need to keep sending down his son? Because obviously Jesus, if it's true, isn't dead. His flesh and bones died, but he ascended to heaven. So he can come down and take in more flesh and be born again. It's really not necessary, right? I had a script idea when I was 18 years old, 18, 19, somewhere in there. It's just a premise. There's no story. But the premise was, is that stars begin to one by one move across space in our sight, right? Stars that have been in that locked position since astronomy noticed that they were there. And one by one, and more stars begin to slowly move across the sky. And they're all converging at a point in space. And at first, we can't really make it out. It's like an image loading on the internet over a modem. And then eventually, they make a cross in the sky. And the premise was exciting for me because the idea was once the cross is formed in the sky, made of stars, something hugely intangible to a scientific mind, right? Imagine a scientist trying to digest that moment. I think it would be an amazing Black Mirror episode where scientists are like, oh crap, I have been an atheist my entire life and look what just happened in the sky. The effigy of Christ is hovering made of stars in space. Maybe they're not even stars. Maybe it's whatever the inside of the firmament dome is made out of. But whatever it is, it's there and it is conclusive proof that Jesus was real. Now today we probably just think it was a bunch of Elon Musk drones in space, right? Yeah, it probably would be. You know, you do it in 1920 and there's no technical explanation for it besides perhaps UFOs playing a big joke on us. But again, if stars were the ones to move and not new objects, that's where you have holes where there were stars. And that's where even today's amazing hoaxes couldn't do it. So what's supposed to happen on Judgment Day? Over, at least if it were to happen tomorrow, it would be 2,020 years since Christ existed on Earth. We know through factual proof on Earth that nothing was written about Christ until about 350 AD. Again, we have about 125 plus or minus 5 documents, marble writings out of the era of Christ up to 300 AD, and no one's mentioning this guy at all. Seems a little illogical, right? So if he's true, it was the worst example of man's ability to document the most important thing that's ever happened to man. And again, you'll have memories of people telling you there's proof and you need to go find it because it doesn't exist. Trust me. I've been down this path twice in my life in a very exhaustive way. And again, the preachers of my church told me, well, it's not really important that Christ really existed. It's important that you follow his teachings. And that clicked for me. And these are Pepperdine University Bible professors, right, with PhDs in the subject matter. I have been rereading the Bible recently to just reprogram my mind with morality and the blessed divinity of those words, because I do think it's divinely constructed, at least in its overall metaphor of how to live my life, right? But this fire and brimstone judgment day thing is that angels, I mean, everyone has a different story. And what's amazing is people will quote, well, people will speak as though they're quoting out of the Bible. And I'll be damned if I can find where they're getting all these specifics about how judgment day is going to work. I mean, the only thing we have is truly, you know, the revelations. And revelations is where you get goosebumps about prophecy. Because they talked about us being on a one world currency. That in itself is phenomenal. If you think about chipping human beings, well, that'll be the mark of the beast in your right hand. It's trippy, man. I don't care how skeptical you are. You grew up with that book before you ever conceived of a one world currency. And now we have like a Bitcoin as a little infrastructure that can be taken over and convert everything. Supposedly what's going on this year is the first step in the last 10 years of most of humans on Earth's lives, where they're going to bankrupt us so horribly that we're going to get into universal income. We're going to have all of our possessions taken from us with the suggestion that the state will provide whatever you need, a car, food, shelter, but you'll be under lock and key within 10 years. We'll all find out if that's true. We will. One way or the other. Now, one of the contingency points of Judgment Day, which really gets Christians to think, it's very fascinating. Same thing when I throw this whole balance of God argument at them. As I say, what if there's some 8-year-old Aborigine kid who was raised only for 8 years, okay? Again, most of my shoes are older than 8 years, right? And I say, here comes Christ out of the sky, or perhaps all the archangels. And again, some of my friends talk about demons coming down at the same time, there being a holy war on the surface of the earth. Others believe there'll be a blissful 1,000 years and that sort of thing. Hey, I'm hoping for the latter, right? But I say, is that kid going to hell? Really? I mean, is God that ridiculous to say this kid, well, it's not his fault, but too bad. Poof. I'm going to spend time and energy torturing this child in a pit of fire. Every Christian has a hard time swallowing that pill. I have talked to some people that are just going, yeah, this is what it does. This is what happens, right? I'm like, okay. Remind me not to go to your Christmas party. But most people will kind of bend the rules because there is no bent rule argument in the Bible, as far as I know, to account for that situation when you take it at absolute. And why does that exist? Why does that argument exist at all? Because there was no balance of God in the story of Christianity. A particular area was blessed with this person's existence in raw flesh. Can you imagine? This is what we don't know. It's a very interesting thing to observe. Christ traveled a lot. He was like Donald Trump on a plane, man. He was making appearances twice a day. taking time and just devoting his entire life when he activated in his late 20s to spread the word of God and the fact that he was the Son of God. He spoke on a mountain. He spoke everywhere. Well, every single being that saw him spoke and felt this, you know, this as a document, this incredible aura of his existence was interpreted by the body and the mind and the soul as pure truth. How could it not be if he's the Son of God? I mean, it would be, it's really meeting God is what it is, right? Those families should have spread the word of Christ profusely. Anyone sinning in the crowd, whatever the rules were of the land, would most likely go home and cleanse their palate. Get rid of and subtract anything that would remotely go against the doctrine of which they just heard. They would, and you would. I've done many episodes on the idea that that's why God doesn't, you know, interfere with our lives by showing up and saying, hey, dude, what's up? Because then you have no more choice. You only have to choose, you could only choose the good side because, he's right there, he's watching me. I don't know how you make love to your spouse. Don't say anything nasty. So let's flip it around and view the other side of the argument. What would be the intent of simply spreading it to a single region? If that's the plan, then algorithmically, are we waiting to see if secularism wipes out religion? Because that's what's happening in 2020 in America. This, you know, Agenda 21 Deep State NWO group is using the excuse in 2020 to close down all the churches, but allow all the rioting. So Satan is allowed to go anywhere he wants, and God is being shut down. We know that religion in general is attacked constantly. Well, part of it is, I think some Christians make it real easy to attack. They don't live by the word itself, and they're not exactly the most articulate, like I said, when they ring the doorbell. If you think of Christianity spreading in the Roman, literally, the boot of Italy, and you think of that as a wildfire starting, physics and science would tell you, the good science would tell you that eventually it will consume all that is consumable and it will go out. I think that you know that through just basic belief systems, when, say, a politician is important in a particular region of time, people latch on to that politician. They get through their trial and tribulation, and the politician is forgotten. How many people in England have pictures of Winston Churchill on their wall to remember his guidance through World War II? Probably several. But what's going to happen in 100 years from now, 200 years from now? Those pictures are coming down, and he will be not forgotten, but deprecated considerably. We have the same thing in America. I'm sure all countries have their leaders that they're proud of, and they fizzle away. And that is just the attrition of belief system. So here I am, a man, sitting in my backyard, looking at this algorithm of Christianity, which, believe me, you know, there was a tremendous amount of money, time, blood spilt, spreading this stuff all over the world. It's not the biggest religion in the world. Muslim religion is the number one religion in the world, Islamic belief. Okay. So it's still not winning the game. It's still not in first place in our horse race. But now, you know, the giant majority of the world doesn't believe in it at all. And the subset that did believe in it, regionally speaking, Europe, let's just say, is largely tearing down churches, getting rid of that belief system. Oh, that was a silly era of our life. And, you know, morality goes out the door at the same time. Insanity ensued once the Muslim invasion happened in Europe, where, again, Germany is persecuting their citizens to change, to adhere to Sharia law. Individuals that are coming in that believe that women should be covered head to toe. Again, the German government won't allow anyone to report the violence of those individuals. If a girl gets raped by one of these people, it's her fault. It's all official story, man. And Merkel's, was it the daughter of Hitler? She's pushing it all through, man. Like father, like daughter, man. So the fire of any flame, no matter how strong it might be at the very beginning, will go out. And the only thing that you can possibly do is put more flammable stuff in there and put more flame in there and the ingredients to make flames work in the first place. Oxygen, something flammable. Well, it's all been left up to man. According to the Bible, we all know that man is very flawed because man partook of the apple. I mean, what's interesting about this story of the Garden of Eden is that all this blame is heaped on the woman for being susceptible to the devil and partaking of the apple. But somehow Adam was completely absolved because the woman convinced him to eat of it. Isn't that strange? So your dad says, don't drive the car. You don't know how to drive it. You're too young. I'm going to hang the keys right here. You know where the keys are. Don't drive the car. And as long as somebody tells you that you can drive the car, you grab the keys and do it despite your father saying, don't drive the car. Well, does that make it okay? No. Confirms you're an idiot. What's another attribute of this game? So, over time, the way that the game has panned out is that Jesus comes, dies, gives us all this incredible information. Again, you can even deprecate out the need to believe that you have to devote your whole soul to Him and still come away with amazing education. Hey, we all get to heaven, He's the guy, then we'll all convert easily. And I think that you'd be very patient with the notion that we thought for ourselves. And we, again, practiced His doctrine, but didn't, because we weren't there, we didn't trust mankind, who has been extremely flawed every split second since the story was initially said to have happened. And what's really strange about it to me is that, there's excuses for this, but if the Catholic Church is the vessel that got to control the story of Christ for at least 1500 years, boy, wouldn't that be strange? You have some children and you will it in your will, in your testament, you say, okay, if anything happens to me, I want my friends next door to raise the kids because I really like them. They're really cool. And the second that you pass away early, let's say your kids go over there and boy turns into an odyssey of Jeffrey Epstein. But you're not talking about a human being that can't come back to fix things. You're talking about God. And supposedly God, you know, strike people down and all this other stuff with lightning if you do stuff wrong. But boy, was He ever patient with all the boy touchers in the Catholic Church. An institution that claims to be representing Him as the ultimate authority on earth is conducting probably the most egregious crimes towards man. I still think it's interesting that the Jewish community understands wholeheartedly that the possessions of those that were put on trains were actually filtered through the Catholic Church to launder their treasures into cash back into the Nazi regime and those that survived after the war. They'd never gone back to get their money. They never petitioned. At least I've never seen a petition. Probably been, you know, some activist somewhere that's done it. But why wouldn't the Israeli government go, okay, it's been, you know, several years since this occurred, approximately about 80 years. It's time you cough up this money into the coffers of all the Jewish folks. Because unlike reparations, where they're trying to get a bunch of people that never owned slaves to pay people who were never slaves a bunch of money, this one's bona fide black and white, man. So God never shows back up again. And I think we all know that secularism is going to be sort of the inertia against the fire of spreading Christianity. Because it's up to man to be articulate, to keep it going. Now, a bunch of different churches broke off, obviously, as they noticed what was happening with the Catholic Church. They disagreed with the interpretation of the Bible. That's what Mormonism is about. But again, if something isn't accessible to you in the form of words or written words, then you may not have had the combination that you need to get to God through these individuals. But what is the game that man plays that I talk about all the time? Supposedly, okay, the way God set up the game is that if you had a sheet of paper and you draw some beautiful sun, perhaps in an upper corner, you see, that's my little symbol for God, an all-glowing light. And down in the other corner, you bring a little black dot. That's me. The paper is the universe. The assertion by man, who's trying to control man through these paradigms, is saying, well, there's no ability for you to draw a direct line directly to God. You can't do it. You have to go through some guy or some girl, mainly a guy. And he sort of outsourced the gate to heaven. You got to go through this person, then you can get to God. You have to learn our ways, then you can get to God. No other way. The Mormon girls have been coming over, been over about 3 or 4 times now. Absolutely wonderful people. Again, I like the way they run their church, to be honest. They're the most, I would say, Christ-like group of people that I've ever seen. You don't hear about, you know, stories like the Catholic Church out of their organization. You have, but I haven't. But they have this other book. I don't want to pick on them in particular, but I think it's interesting. They're obsessed with you believing that their other book is true. And I asked them the other day, I said, well, are you telling me indirectly that the Bible's flawed? And they go, what? I said, well, I'm very versed in the Bible, as much as anybody can be with that giant book. That's why I'm rereading it, so I get the Old Testament better in my brain. And you're telling me that I'm missing something is kind of what I'm getting from you, that if I don't have this extra book, then I am missing what's going on. That this book is flawed, and I need your book to correct this book. That's pretty, if this is all true, if the Bible's even true, then why didn't Christ speak about your guy? Why didn't Christ prophesize that there'll be another one that will rebirth the authority to God? It's an asinine argument. The Bible's supposed to be perfect, if you believe it. You can interpret it a bunch of different ways and it can still be perfect. But I wouldn't want to stand before God and say, yeah, I told a bunch of people your book was just kind of sort of on track and our book was the one that got everybody on track. Ooh, that's some guts, man. But it's always about being in trouble, isn't it? It's always about being in trouble. Manipulation. What's political correctness in this world? It's about being in trouble. I have the way to speak. You are speaking wrong. Let me tell you what words are accepted this week. And by the way, about 2 years from now, all those words are going to be bad, and I'll have some new words. So I can control you again by insinuating that you're wrong, that you're a bad person in society. Thought police at its best, right? I think that one of the sort of blowback effects of the Bible is that it is such an eclectic book, especially the Old Testament, right? New Testament is actually very easy to get through. 4 versions of the same story. written for different areas of the land at the time, and then this gentleman writing a bunch of letters to clarify what those four, well, what the man in the four stories means or meant. But the Old Testament, well, it's really sort of a buffet of stories that don't go together at all necessarily. Now they do string together by prophecy and what have you. But I've even had a friend of mine read me passages recently where he feels like certain things that are spoken are prophecy, and I didn't get that at all. But see, that's how it works. It's different for all of us. He's still getting a blessed feeling in his soul. But again, that leaves a lot of complexity for the mind. I've probably gone through the Bible once thoroughly, start to finish, but since then, just, you know, hodgepodgey through it. Book of Mormon is so difficult to remember because it is so all over the place. It's like Game of Thrones times 10 in the number of people in the book. And being a screenwriter, you'll learn very quickly, the more people you create, the more difficulty you create for the audience to remember who's who, where are we. If you have 30 different locations, you know, the only way that that usually works is like a Mission Impossible, where you really have Tom Cruise and his little gaggle of guys, and no matter if they jump between Cairo and Paris and New York, and you don't even care. It's just, that's just window dressing for these people involved to carry out some mission that's otherwise considered impossible. For me, it is nearly, and I would say we're talking about it, the other part of the percentile would be less than a single percent, nearly impossible for me to believe that this is truly such a punishing black and white set of rules, because man is so flawed. You know, it's interesting. I think, let's just take the biology of man as communicated by probably people in your own circle. If any of you have a surviving parent who's, say, over 70, a grandparent, you will probably have heard them say at least once, if not a million times, well, I just can't remember things like I used to. And so the mind becomes a defective, you know, organ in the body to interact with this reality. And I think that one is much quicker due to toxins and radio frequencies that we're bombarded with every single day. But I think that even in the 1800s, before even a telegram was invented, and we're eating well, it is God's attrition to help us disengage with this reality prior to death by simply taking it away from you slowly as you get older. Slight digression on the same subject. Many of you have taken relatives through dementia. Unfortunately, the toxic reality of Alzheimer's, which has a completely faux past that is a creation of the 80s due to changes in diet and probably an over-introduction of aluminum into our food supply through utensils and cans and pots and pans, probably some of the non-stick stuff on the pans. But dementia has always existed. So even just with that true organic deterioration, you will have relatives that will go through a very tough last 5 to 10 years of their life. They'll wake up in rooms and scream in terror that they don't know where they are. They have long-term memory, but they don't have short-term memory. So they might know who you are, but they don't remember the room. That's why I think one of the things that we did in the past that was totally serendipitous due to budgetary issues and customs of the time was that we allowed our grandparents to live in our homes until they passed, and they were familiar with our homes 20, 30 years ago because we didn't move around like we do now. And so they probably had a much easier time dealing with the oncomings of dementia because they would remember the living room because they've been there for 30 years, right? So like the Charlie Bucket home from Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory movie, right? The reason why I want to make an episode like this is that when I talk about religion to folks, the subplot of religion, which I don't necessarily know if it's the, I definitely don't think it's the intent of God. I don't think if Jesus existed as documented in the Bible, I don't think he would want you to have this emotion whatsoever. And again, Jesus never talked about the Catholic Church, never talked about a hierarchy of centrally religious royalty, with the guy at the top. He never said any of that stuff was coming. The Catholic Church lied and had a painting made where Jesus was giving the key to the Pope to assert such a notion, but he would have talked about it had it been the plan. He would have. But guilt is the emotion that travels almost like the protocol. Like everything over the internet travels over a TCP/IP protocol nowadays. Not too much UDP out there, right? So it's a method to transfer information. And within TCP/IP, you get FTP, HTTP, all these other protocols. It's like the telegram. The telegram is just the way you move letters. Inside the telegram could be instructions on how to bake a cake. The sub-protocol. But it seems like guilt is the method by which those who are evangelists, especially and missionaries and preachers, and even your friends, will slip it in there in a passive way to control you. And to almost indirectly ensure that there's no more need to go home uncertain about your belief in God. It's almost like a dueling match if you talk to someone. I have yet to have a single conversation with someone like myself. And I think that that's sort of weird that I can't meet another human being that is as open-minded about Christianity as I am. Either they totally don't believe or they totally do believe. Now, there are infinite flavors, like infinite numbers within each one of those groups. But I can't have an open-minded conversation with another human being about any of these subjects. So I greatly appreciate you listening. I mean, probably one of the most, we all think about, I think we think about, any mature human being thinks about, what kind of conversation are you going to have with God once all the judgment has been handed in and you make it? You can stay in the realm of God. Well, I would love to have the conversation with him where he's like, why didn't you believe this? Or I think it was interesting how you sorted that particular thing out. What was your evolution? And he knows all the answers, but he's playing dumb for us so we can have a nice conversation, just like you do with your daughters or your sons when they're small. You want to hear how their brain works. There's no mystery necessarily of how your kids are operating. So this episode is trying to, I guess, pull you out of the pool that is littered with this substrate of guilt so that you can be more free to open your mind and feel comfortable that God isn't going to judge you because you're using the apparatus he gave you, which is your mind. We allow too many people to shut down our brains. We really do. And I think that that's grossly unfair. Because if being alive means that you can't be totally alive, then there's probably some sort of sin in there. And I think I've said it before, which is, you know, there's so many things when you learn more information about something. I would love to call it the truth, but then again, we're all trying to grapple at, you know, little particles of information that we get from various areas. But we wrap our minds around things. I just said in a recent episode about a friend of mine kind of bouncing around to Gwen Stefani music. And for me, I've cut her off in my brain. She probably was innocent and great at one point, just some kid from Orange County singing songs, definitely a gorgeous girl. But now she's showing up to essentially devil worshiping parties. And I don't have anything to do with her anymore. I don't care if she's stupid in getting in there. She took selfies. It was important to her to capture herself at these locations with a sacrificed effigy of a girl in the form of a cake. Just go look it up. Spirit Cooking, Gwen Stefani. Google or DuckDuckGo. You'll find it. It's sad. I think I said a long time ago, I know I did, which is that the Statue of Liberty, which is this beacon of America, was given to us by the money changers of France, which were the Rothschilds who had moved from Frankfurt into Paris to form the Club 300. They worship Queen Semiramis, and that's who the Statue of Liberty is. Now, Queen Semiramis was said to have a virgin birth of Tamos. She was sort of a Mary. Her husband Nimrod was chopped up into a bunch of pieces. When trying to put Humpty Dumpty back together again, she couldn't find his phallus, and the phallus went off to the Templars and became the obelisk. Again, go look up the coin from, I believe, 4500 BC with Queen Semiramis sitting on a throne. She has the 7 points on her crown. She's holding a reed that's tied, and that symbolizes the people under her control. Our legislators knew what this thing was. And so they forced it to the Jersey Bay off of land to keep it in its own maritime law. And it was, you know, it was finished being erected in 1885. In 1886, they finished the Washington Monument, which was the Masons of Washington, D.C., stamping the ground with their ownership. Basically telling Europe, we own this place. Sorry about your statue out there. And then Europe was the one that attached the phrase to the Statue of Liberty. Give me your tire, your, you know, all that stuff to try to create an influx of Europeans to America to break America's back. And to their surprise, as soon as they landed on land, just like Nikola Tesla, they realized they were in the promised land where there was no king or queen, where the Constitution built from Magna Carta was in effect. Little do we know that about 30 years later, we're going to lose control of our money to those people. So we put a lot of celebratory, you know, sentimentality on top of things that perhaps we should rethink a little bit. The cool thing about the Bible for me is that it becomes easier for me to digest. This is nothing new, and I apologize for repeating the concept to the OG listeners. It's easier for me to digest as a metaphor, as an analogy of some sort. Perfect stories with perfect truths in them. What's better than that? What is better than that? Now, if you take the Old Testament and the New Testament, you've got a bunch of folklore about how to sacrifice sheep for the people's sins. Again, they built these temples and they would sacrifice a sheep, a lamb, in the center of the temple, which normal human beings weren't allowed because they had class structure again, something that's very ungodlike. The blood would spill down the altar, go into these drains that would then go out underneath all the inner chambers of the churches in four directions and spill out into the street. And the people were said to scream in joy that their sins for everything since the last one up to that day had been forgiven. Okay, so imagine you're the governments of the time and you're Rome. You're the most powerful government that's ever been conceived of and created by man. And you're looking at this hokey thing that's been going on for about 4,000 years, and you're like, we got to put an end to this, man. It's ridiculous. Yeah, what am I going to do? Well, have this idea. We're going to take, you know the stories of virgin births and all. Yeah, there's a bunch of them. Yeah, I know, right? Well, what if we create the ultimate one? And we just end this problem once and for all. And we leave the people with the beautiful story with a moral code. Of course, we tie in our 10%, and we make sure everybody, we don't lose control of the things. So we're going to make churches. We're going to make a hierarchical infrastructure. We're going to call the Vatican. And you're like, well, we don't want to lose control of like us being Caesar and all the senators that control it. Yeah, don't worry about it. It's going to happen. We're going to call the top dude, the Pope. He's going to be in charge. And all the other senators go, no way, man. The reason why Rome is so successful is we have a Senate that meets to decide what the people want. We represent different areas of Europe. Okay, all right. Well, okay, so maybe you're all popes at first, right? We all be popes. They don't even tell them they're just going to filter down to one eventually. And of course, they're all going to die. So they buy the Kool-Aid. They stay in power. They have this ultimate authority over the land for a little while until they all die. And, you know, it turns into what it turned into. No more sheep get slaughtered. Being forgiven is nothing more than a ritual and water under some authority known as the church. And then you just simply come every Sunday, give some money to Caesar. Today, it's just keeping the doors open of churches, right? And sure, there's been charlatans and create fake churches and stuff to get rid of taxes and all that stuff. But I mean, again, America didn't collect income tax out of the citizens until 1913. The total scam of the 16th Amendment, right? It's been a very, very long time since the people didn't live in a completely corrupt government system. So in one realm of thought, we're to feel guilty if we go against the government of religion. But we're not to feel guilty if we go against the government of our country, right? Screw taxes, man. I'm going to get out of paying any of that stuff and all this other stuff. And then say, well, all of it's probably bunk. Aren't you just a human being? I mean, seriously, if you just divorce yourself from all these paradigms of authority, not to create chaos in the jungle and, you know, just kill people at will because you feel like it, you've had a bad day or something. We're not talking about that. Common law is the law of the land. Do no harm, as I always say. Now, we know that there were kings, and the Bible talks about a lot of the history of the world at the time, which is, for the Bible's sake, a very, very small footprint on this planet. It doesn't travel that much. It really doesn't. It doesn't really prophesize that the world will be populated. It doesn't really prophesize. I mean, apparently there's some sections in the Bible that do talk about the Americas, if you really kind of bend your interpretation of it. All right. It doesn't come right out and say it, though. Sounds strange. It seems strange that Christ wouldn't say something to the effect of, and you will discover more people in the land, far off lands, across the ocean. And those people will need to be educated about my life. Again, the Mormons say he went over there and did some stuff. Again, he's still missing, even the Book of Mormon, all of Eurasia, as far as I remember. To talk about Australia. I don't think he talks about South America. And I've read all kinds of books that say such a thing. Back in the late 80s, early 90s, when I was writing this book, it was dealing with all of these issues. That's a lot of burden put on man, don't you think? And not one visit. Not one visit. Now, some people interpret this skepticism as a full rejection of the Bible. And some people take it to the extreme of saying you're denying God in general, because God was Jesus. And if you deny anything that we believe about him, then you're denying him completely. Well, it's not the way I see it whatsoever. If we're talking about a divine being that is good in all realms, infinitely patient with man, in Genesis, God was being asked about, in the book of Sodom and Gomorrah, he was asked about the city. And because he was talking about the city going south, you know, everybody was practicing all these horrific things, which pretty much sounds like Hollywood today, right? At least the bad areas of Hollywood. And they said, would you raise a city if there were only, say, 4 families in the city that believed what you want them to believe and they follow your doctrine? And they kept asking God this question, and it got all the way down to the point that God said, if there's just one person in the city that's following my teachings, then I won't raise the city. That sounds pretty patient to me. When you think about flooding the world, for instance, and killing every living being that wasn't on the ark, it's hard to believe that every single being in the entire world was going into some demonic possession and being so evil, blasphemous, that God would choose to kill everyone. Sounds like God made a big mistake to me. He was resetting the planet by killing everyone off. Sort of contradicts the doctrine that Jesus would come down and teach man how to behave. Guess God's figuring it out. Well, plan B didn't work. Plan A didn't work. Plan B is put my son down there. Maybe that one will stick. You look at the world today and you're like, oh my God. Why is everyone who's in charge evil? It's just weird. Now, it's not true, but boy, I don't even know what the percentage would be of people that really have good hearts. Could be the people that are sucking on this Agenda 2030 exhaust pipe are somehow seeing this utopia in their mind, and they're not putting together what constant surveillance would look like, you know. And, you know, it's the battle of the promises at one point where someone is being fed a bunch of crap. And as long as that's the crap they want to believe, they'll believe it. And of course, a little short-term paycheck will sway a lot of people out of their faith, will sway people right out of their religion, of their morality, all to get just a little tiny something-something on earth. I think it's pretty safe to believe that the majority of politicians that go for this NWO stuff, they can't possibly believe any story about God. And this is my suspicion, and I mean very, very serious here. I just saw, I think it was from Dark 5 channel. It's in the episode called Secret Rooms, if you want to see it. Dark 5's the channel. It's actually a very intriguing channel. A lot of, you know, he has a little pop science in there once in a while, but he's just trying to entertain. They talked about a bunch of secret rooms in the world. Very interesting, but they're always about 10 minutes long. It's very easy to digest. But he talks about the secret room in the basement of the Vatican that has all these treasures. Now, we know that room exists. There's several people that have gone and come out. But one of the things he said, he talks about the fact that that all the assets of the Jews were laundered through that. But he also talks about that in that secret room, it has been said more than once that it talks about the fact that there's proof that the story of Christ was absolutely positively invented. And that's in the basement of the Vatican. Not hard to believe for me whatsoever. Again, if you study Dr. Atwell and Titus Flavius, the greatest Caesar to ever exist in Rome, created the Colosseum, created the arena, modernized Rome to what you see today. Jesus is actually a typology retelling of Titus Flavius' life. He's got 45 touch points between Flavius and Jesus. So imagine you're one of these people. Pick one of the people that you think are very evil in this world And let's just say that that documentation actually exists, or very credible people who have read it, circle the world and tell everybody, you know, I totally read it, man. Maybe even have photographs of the passages. I imagine it'd be written in Latin. But they see the proof that this is all a hoax. And imagine what that would do to you as a Christian. You've been devoted to this belief system your entire life, and someone says, what was it? It was like that scene in Poltergeist. I just recently watched Poltergeist the other day, and when the first crew that shows up to clean the house shows up, and they were talking about, the black guy was talking to the father with everyone else there, and he said, you know, I filmed a matchbox that crossed the floor 12 feet. And he goes, of course, it wasn't visible to the naked eye, but I have it on time-lapse photography. And the dad just looks at him with these bloodshot eyes because he hasn't slept in days. And he says, yeah. He opens the door to the daughter's room, and everything is flying around the room. You know, like a compass hit a record and was playing it, you know. And it was like, they're like, oh, my God. The lamp flew and the shade come off and came back on. And they're like, yeah, your matchbox, big deal. All right, so you believe in Christianity, and they take you into the most holy place on earth that galvanized it into the consciousness of man through inquisitions nearly went 1,000 years. And they sit you down, and they pull out some really old book. And you can bring your own Latin translator with you, whatever you need to validate whatever's being read to you. And they say, you can tell this book's ancient. And it's all the exhaustive details of the formation of the church, all the exhaustive details of why the Inquisitions were planned, why they were planned to drive this into the consciousness of man. We talk about each one of the Crusades to spread this system of belief all over the world, because everyone who believes it gives unto Caesar what is Caesar's. Thus, power. That'd be a little soul-crushing experience for your average Christian, right? So if you wonder how some of these politicians behave the way they behave, that might explain it. Now, what doesn't get explained is those who seem to worship Baphomet and Moloch and all these other entities which are just as spiritual as Christ, you know? Does anything that I've said negate the existence of a centralized consciousness that we call God? No, not at all. All it is static and interference between you and God. Remember the piece of paper I told you about? Well, guess what? The true fact about that piece of paper, according to me, is that the whole piece of paper is God. And you're a dot inside of God. You can't be without God, otherwise you wouldn't exist. So where do you need to go to be with God? Where you are? What brings you closer to God? Well, probably acknowledging He exists, because you can see the universe. Again, everything in the universe is beautiful. It's alive. Hell, even a planet is beautiful. A star is beautiful. Every plant is beautiful. Every fish, every insect, humans. Everything is beautiful. And the mathematics that creates it? Well, look at a Fibonacci pattern and tell me you're not seeing exquisite mathematics. And if you're a programmer or an engineer, well, this is bug-free software, my friends. Bug-free engineering. It never breaks. It does exactly what it does. Doesn't mean you can't get sucked into a hurricane, a tornado, a crevasse from an earthquake. Stuff happens. It's organic. It's chaotic. Some people can't believe in God because they see children suffer. And boy, that does really rack the brain. Until you believe in reincarnation. Living forever. Until you see the full story of Q on Star Trek. Especially the episode in Voyager. The one Q wants to kill himself because he's done everything the universe can give him, because he never forgot anything. He never died. and he was never reborn. Now, for those of you who had good childhoods, wasn't that a magical time? You believe someone could snatch your nose. Your uncle could pull his thumb off of his other hand and put it back on. Your other uncle could pull a coin from behind your ear. Santa Claus came once a year. Pretty cool, right? There was a Sandman and a Tooth Fairy and an Easter Bunny. Magic, because you were young and you'd forgotten about all those things. Your cynicism of reality disappeared and everything was magical again. And as you grew older, grew into your older body, as my friend Sid Mead told me once, he goes, one of the most courageous things you can do is get old. He was quoting another man. So true. To live in a body that is constantly aging and gaining problems. It just happens, man. I want you to live a free life. Free of guilt. Free of other people's manipulation. Keep your faith. Keep your belief in God. If Christianity is the way that feels good to you, then do it. But do it without guilt. Try not to allow anyone else to guilt you into their interpretation, and try not to guilt anyone else into your interpretation is my advice. And you will find, in my opinion, that all that veneer that's been put on God, right? It's like he's got paneling and he's got linoleum on him and he's got old brick on him. He's been covered up with a bunch of darkness, a bunch of things that shroud his true beauty, his true patience, his true beauty of creation. Let's pull all that stuff off and let God shine the way that he or she shines in our lives, right? Let me know what you think. This stuff's more and more important to me as the world gets more chaotic. What I don't know is if I wasn't my age that I am, if I would notice that the world is the way it is. I think the answer is yes, because we have so many young people rioting now and looting and stealing and murdering. And all that comes from a lack of morality, a lack of prosperity, poverty that grows, uncertainty, bad educations. These kids feel trapped, man. They feel like they have no future, so why not burn the whole place down? Well, if you have a place that you don't want burned down, then it's probably good to spread as much positivity as possible. Put some skin in the game to make things better. If you're an educator, be the best educator you can be. Go back to the drawing board and make sure you're the best educator. If your students are constantly telling you that you're an exceptional educator, then just keep doing what you do. If you're a parent, try to be the best parent you can be. Educate. Discipline. Your kids will never regret it. You know, I have, other than friends of mine that were literally beaten by their parents, which unfortunately is more common than I would like to admit, for those of us that got spankings, I swear to God, I don't know anybody that regrets getting a spanking, because in the end, they became a much more disciplined human being. And again, we're not talking about some belt beating fest, but just a swat on the diaper, just a moment of correction. Moment of uncertainty for the child, but then you give him a giant hug when it's all over. My dad, in his most disciplinary stage, always followed up with that last step. I didn't understand it at the time, but it helped. Gotta fix this planet, people. And I think that we have to remove the negativity out of every paradigm. And since religion has served us well to create societies that behaved, it's a real sad thing that it's getting deprecated more and more as time goes by, in my opinion. And imagine that. A guy telling you that religion is super important and perhaps doesn't believe the literal translation of anything. But there's the analogy and the metaphor that is pure frequency of truth, in my opinion. Anyway, that's it for this episode. If you haven't been to Deep Thoughts Radio, please go. All the video, audio, social media, and all remastered season one. A couple ways to donate to the show, all ready for your consumption. There's also a search field and a category list in case you want to just watch a certain type of video sequence. Maybe this one turned you on, you want to see more. Maybe this one turned you off and you'd like to go back to some old NASA episodes. Whatever you like, it's all up there. Anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.